C6, number 8A.
We come to the next vertical. The epitome on the top of that vertical, we have principle and idea is one. Now, let's just see the place value of that vertical by going quickly over those four elements of the index I. We had first God revealing himself as what he is in his nature. Then, in the Christ, to see that God's nature is always translated to the point of infinite individual ideas, so that we can understand God through the ideas of God, and only in that way we can understand God, because we cannot understand God as a whole, but only in its translated way as infinite ideas. When we see that it translates itself to the point of ideas, then we say, oh well, then the realm of being is a realm of ideas. That's Christianity. But this realm of ideas is not somewhere apart from God. Therefore, it must be stressed that these ideas are ideas of God, God's idea, God's idea, that idea and principle is one. And therefore, in this last column, we have a very great sense of the oneness of principle and idea. That principle is not somewhere and idea somewhere else, but that it is one and the same thing, only that we perceive that principle is interpreting itself infinitely as its own idea. It's actually here that we come to science, where the aspect of science is stressed, and the very first thing that we have to know is that we are a scientist and not a mortal. Teaching Christian Science, the 13th chapter, wants to bring out just that very point. Wants to bring out the point that we are a scientific idea, the idea of science, and the main accent is on being a Christian scientist. How are we a Christian scientist? What is necessary to be a Christian scientist? And all through the chapter rings one big tone, namely, adhere to the principle and rule of Christian Science, and then you are a Christian scientist. That what makes a mathematician is not that he has two legs and two arms. What makes him a mathematician is that he adheres to the principle of mathematics. In the same manner, how are we a Christian scientist? Therefore, that has nothing to do with our body, with our person. How are we a Christian scientist? By adhering to the principle and rule of this science. So, we learn here to be a Christian scientist, and this way we enter into that whole last vertical, where then the nature of science is being shown. So here we have a great sense of steadfastly abiding by principle, strictly adhering to principle and its rules, and not to deviate from that rule. And one of the interesting part really here is that she brings in for the first time in the textbook, and the only time, the ethics of Christian Science. We would think that ethics has nothing to do really with science or with the spiritual, that it has something to do with the second degree, with the moral. But here it is shown that she lifts up the ethics into spiritual ethics. I would say into the ethics of science, because when she explains what the ethics of Christian Science is, then we find something quite staggering at the first moment. She says, the ethics of Christian Science is that all is mind. We would, I think, never have connected the term all is mind with an ethical sense. But when one reads the whole chapter and listens spiritually to the tonality of this ethics of all is mind, one begins to realize what she's saying. That she lifts here really mankind out of the realm of moral codes, of adhering to moral codes, and making a man a good ethical man, and lifts him out into the science and says, you know, everything is ethical that starts out from mind. And therefore, everything you do, if you do it from mind, is always ethical, no matter how the world will judge it. The point here is that we can no more judge anybody or anything according to ethical values. Here, that sense is finished, which says a Christian Scientist should do this and he shouldn't do that. A good Christian Scientist is known by if he does this and doesn't do that. This is all finished here. Here she says, whatever therefore is done, experienced, said, spoken, acted upon, that is from mind, is always ethical, no matter what the world will say to it. That's why Jesus would be able to go to the places of the sinners and harlots. Because if you go out from mind, it's ethical, it's moral. Everything that therefore is derived from the synonymous terms is always right, and that's our ethics. It's finished with that sense that puts up a code of morals and says what we are allowed to do and what we are not allowed to do. And that if we do these things and those things, that we are not a good Christian Scientist. We can no more judge. We'll see that when we go through the logic of Christian Science, there we will see even clearer the reason for this logic and see there that the judging is always a two-valued logic. You always judge and say, this is right, this is wrong. And therefore always goes out from the dualistic sense that has been implanted into our consciousness. But Christian Science has a new logic, a different logic than the dualistic logic. And therefore we should stop judging people and Christian Scientists according to their deeds. We should only judge them according to the source of their deeds. From where do they draw it? Is it something that has been impelled by mind, or is it something that has been impelled by a standard of morals? Therefore, Jesus said, judge not. Therefore, why should we judge? He could see the new logic. He could see that we have no way of judging outwardly the actions of anybody. We only can judge when we know from which source somebody has drawn his action, his deeds. The source must be judged, or If that is a wrong rendering, the source has been evaluated. Is that source God or was it something else? If the action comes from something else than the inspiration of the one mind, it's unmoral. It's immoral. It's unethical. And therefore, that which is considered ethical and moral in the world is mostly considered to be immoral, or let's say unethical, in Christian Science. In the world, we are not judged. We are not punished. If we go out from a material standpoint and reason from a material standpoint. But here in this chapter, Mrs. Eddy says that if you are going out from a material standpoint, that this is against the moral, the ethics of the one mind. In the world, we can do a lot of things that is called moral and ethical, and nobody will be punished for it. In Christian Science, these very acts will be seen to be immoral, unethical, and will be punished through the divine principle. We get a completely new evaluation of acts in this chapter, because the ethics is all is mind. Therefore, in the world, nobody is punished because he goes to a doctor or because he takes a medicine. Not in Christian Science. In Christian Science, this is quackery. I mean, with certain exceptions, which I don't want to speak now, it's quackery and therefore unethical in Christian Science. Can you see what this chapter is doing to us? I think it's a chapter which we have not quite fathomed yet, where we haven't quite seen the depth of it and the implication of it. By the way, I must make that remark here because I made it right now about doctors. It's interesting that this one chapter alone is the chapter that deals with the question, should a Christian Scientist take medicine or not medicine? Should he take a doctor? Should he not take a doctor? One would think that that would have been in the practice chapter, that the practice chapter would take up that question. But interestingly enough, it is the beginning and the end of this 13th chapter that Mrs. Eddy takes up the question. And takes it up and makes it rather clear the various aspects to that question. First she starts in and says, we should not make a compromise, because this would be unethical in Christian Science, to make compromises. To make compromise with Christian Science treatment and medical treatment. Because, she says, it deters from the entire confidence in mind. So can you see, the world will not consider anybody unethical if he takes medicine. Not so in Christian Science. We have a different evaluation. Then in the next paragraph she says, but naturally if somebody has not full trust in Christian Science, he should be free to go to a doctor. Then he acts very honestly and he should take the doctor. But then, in that case, the Christian Scientist practitioner should not take on the case anymore. At the second paragraph in it. And then at the end of the chapter, she comes back to it and says, but there is another... Oh, yes. Then in the beginning, she also goes on and says, but... Now she has a different condition. She says, but if you have earnestly and honestly try to help somebody or yourself with Christian Science, and you see that you don't succeed, then what are you doing? Then she goes again back to the ethics of Christian Science and says, then mind will still lead you to the right use of temporal and eternal means. Can you see? She doesn't say, if the practitioner cannot heal you, or you cannot heal yourself, then go to the doctor. She has an intermediary stage, which is still ethical, that says, then go to mind and ask mind for guidance. But let mind guide you to the use, to the right use, not to the wrong use, to the right use of temporal and eternal means. Can you see that for mind, all is mind, that even for mind, there is a possibility that mind can guide us into the right use of temporal means. So the question never is that it's that should come up, and it's a wrong question that says, well, if we can't heal a case, it gets worse and worse, which happens, then that's the sign that you should go to the doctor. No, that's a sign that you should go to the divine mind. If the divine mind opens the way so and arranges the situation so and orders things so that a doctor may be called in, then that's the guidance of mind. It's not the decision of a human common sense attitude. So common sense is not science. Divine mind is science. Therefore, in every case, we should be open to the leadings of the divine mind and not shut out the infinite possibilities that mind can present in using everything in the world for the leadings of mind. And then only right at the end of this chapter she takes up the subject for the fourth time. And she says, but if you should be in violent pain and you just can't help yourself in that violent pain, then why don't you go to the doctor and have a hypodermic injection? But not leave it there. She doesn't stop there. She said, as a transitional stage, until then you find again your peace and rest to work it out again with mind. So even then, when she says, well, have an injection to free yourself of the pain, that's not the end of it. That's only a transitionary solution and not the solution. It's transitionary. You still have to work out the whole problem. Can you see how in this chapter, in no other chapter, as far as I remember, I may be mistaken, but as far as I remember, the whole question that is very often comes up, naturally in practice and in one's life, should we have the help of medicine or of doctors, of hospitals and so on, is a question that is only treated in this chapter. And it's teaching and not practice. Isn't it interesting? And it is that teaching which says, you know, there is an ethics about the whole thing. It's an ethical question. And the ethics is, are you always going out from mind or not? Whatever the case is, if you can't heal it, if it gets worse and worse, if you have terrific pain, if there is no trust in Christian Science, let mind inform you what is right. Yes. In this chapter, you can see that she wants to bring out that this adherence in every situation to the principle, to the mind of Christian Science, and only let ourselves be instructed by the one mind, by nothing else, is naturally also that which makes us a mind idea or a science idea. The more we are constantly using the scientific way of dealing with the situation, the more we are a scientist, not a man, not a mortal, not a person. It's that chapter which frees us from personality, of being a person deciding on something. And so in this chapter 2, we find a paragraph on scientific obstetrics. And in that paragraph on scientific obstetrics, there is also something interesting about it. Because the moment we say obstetrics, we think about the birth. A birth of what? The birth of a child. The birth of men. Whereas in the whole paragraph, she doesn't talk about men. She speaks about the birth of the new child or divine idea. What is being born is not a new man, but a divine idea. Here we feel, when we come to this last four chapters, we feel very, very much that we are taken out of the manhood sense, of the man's sense of Christianity, and being brought back to its principle, so that really what comes after Christianity, that which comes after man, is really the idea of science. And here this 13th chapter builds the bridge, so to say, to be the scientific idea, and not just a scientific man, to be the divine scientific idea. Yes, well, how shall we summarize this very point? I think when we take the point of intersection, we could start out again by saying, by accepting our unity with principle, we are principle idea. We are principle idea, principle dash idea, whatever you want to write it. Just to bring out, we are, or you could say, we are a Christian Scientist. Then you stress the scientific aspect of our being. All right. We go further to the next chapter, recapitulation. Here again, I think we could see how a matrix can be creative and intelligent and teach us something, to give us information. It would have to give us the information that the point of intersection is science and Christ, meaning that a science has a Christ, that not only the Word has a Christ, but God has a Christ, not only that Christ is the Christ, not only that an idea has a Christ by dissolving its illusion, but that a science has a Christ. Naturally, if a science has a Christ, it has a different office than if an idea has a Christ. It would have to say what? That science as a Christ must be a savior, a saving science, an absolutely saving science. That's why Mrs. Eddy called, really, her discovery, the Christ science. See that combination of science and Christ, the Christ science. or what is that which I denominated Christian Science. So, what, and we could reason on further, see, without knowing really what is in that chapter, we could reason on and say, if Mrs. Eddy sees that there is a science that is saving, how does a science save? How does any science save? A science can only save by presenting the subject under consideration in a system. Because only when we know the system, when the principle is presented in a system, it can be understood and it can be demonstrated. And only then does it save. The science of arithmetic is only then the savior when that science is broken down to its categories. And we can learn that principle of arithmetic through the categories. That's how we learn it at school. If we would only feel that there is a science of arithmetic, we wouldn't be able to use it as a savior, as a solving principle. That which makes it as a savior, that which makes the science a savior, is the ability of breaking down that principle of that science to its component parts and explaining the component parts so that we can grasp the subject through the categories. And that's exactly what Mrs. Eddy does in Recapitulation. There she takes the one principle, starting out, what is God, giving that definition of what is God, therefore the overall definition, and then breaking it down in a deductive way, step by step by step, until she brings it right down to a saving science.